It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Well, who else but one of my favorite guests to join us again, multi-award-winning, platinum-selling artist Matt Dusk. And he's going to be performing Matt Dusk Sings Tony Bennett. The best is yet to come in Myron's at the Smith Center this Friday and Saturday, February 21st and 22nd. And for ticket information, go to thesmithcenter.com. For everything about Matt, you go to mattdusk.com and you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube. And Matt, welcome back to the show.
I think this might be our 20th anniversary together.
That could very well be.
I was doing it in my head. I think I first met you in 04.
I think slightly after. Right. Yes, you're absolutely right. Yes.
We're still here.
We're just nothing off air. You have a distinguished patina about you for our listeners who are, we have viewers and listeners. The listeners can't tell, but you have this wonderful, distinguished patina of what appears to be gray in the beard and in the hair. I love it.
I love these, these MacBook lenses. When the sun comes on you, your skin looks all red and your hair looks all gray. But I will say, when I was a kid first listening to this music, you know, all the heroes that I loved, I'd always see them with gray hair. And as a young kid, I was always like, I can't wait till I have gray hair. And now my daughter thinks I look almost like a young Santa Claus.
Oh, nice. I like, but you have a combination of the gray and the hip aspect, because you've got the no tie on your shirt as I do. So, but I'm never hip, but you have no tie on your shirt, and you have a wonderful background, for those who are not seeing it, of wonderful photos that have various things on them. I'll be very vague. People, boy, what is he talking about? Anyway, never mind all that. First of all, the last time I talked with you, you were on the show and you were coming to the Smith Center to perform, I'll call it a tribute, if that's the right word, to Frank Sinatra, and now a tribute to Tony Bennett. So did you ever get, first of all, the most important question I have to ask is, did you ever get a chance to meet Tony Bennett?
Multiple times. I think I first met him in 2004 when I was filming that Fox reality TV show called The Casino at the Golden Nugget. And when Tony would come into town, I would always get front row seats or third row seats to go watch him perform. And then after the shows, I'd get to meet him after the shows or get to go see him, and we'd talk. And he was the last of that generation.
Yeah, right? He was. Did he encourage you in any way? Because your style, again, you're a relatively young guy, despite the gray patina. You're a relatively young guy, and yet you have always paid tribute to, and you've created a path to performing what I would call the classics, but in a modern sense. It's a paraphrase of what you do, but it's my own, so I'm going to throw it out there. But you had this great lineage of Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, and others, who the Great American Songbook, classic standards, big band, swing, et cetera, et cetera. And so did you talk to him about tips or suggestions, or did he offer them without you asking?
It's a long answer, because I probably met him.
Oh, hang on a second. That was a long question, so it deserves a long answer. Yes, right ahead.
I probably spent time with him over 20 times, either opening up for him or seeing him backstage or at a dinner or a birthday party. And, the thing with artists is you don't really want to ask them, like, so how do you get prepared for this song? Because you're going to get an answer that's probably been rehearsed, right? So you got to try to find the right time of going, hey, man, like, how's your day going? Oh, did you try the hamburger upstairs? Wow. And then you start talking about food and then art. And then all of a sudden it blends into a story about touring in the road. And, I was very lucky that I had shoulders to stand on. You know, if you look at any of the modern crooners, I'd say from Harry Connick, Michael Bublé, myself, we had an entire catalog of references. You know, Frank Sinatra, big fan of Bing Crosby when he was starting out. You know, Frank Sinatra, obviously a big admirer of Tony Bennett, and Tony Bennett had a lasting relationship with Frank, called him his best friend, and all that kind of stuff permeates right down from artist to artist. So when I would talk with him, he would share stories. Say for example, I remember one night I was watching him on stage. You know, Tony's like, I think at that time he was in his very late 70s. I think it was like 79. He's on stage, you know, 400 people in the audience. Talk about an intimate like opportunity. And, you know, one night we're just having a chit chat. And I said, you know, watching you on stage, you're so cool. Do you ever get nervous? Because I can't shake it. You know, just like perfect time to ask a question like that. And he laughs and he goes, well, let me tell you what Frank Sinatra told me when I asked him that question. And he told me the whole story. He's like, of course, you get nervous, you know, because it shows people that you care and stick to great songs. And I always remember that, because if I'm ever on stage and, you know, it could be a big night or I'm at the start of a tour or for whatever reason, I can just go to the audience. I'm like, hey, guys, thank you so much for being a little bit nervous, but I'm ready to perform. And Tony told me that the audience will sense that and they'll really root for you. So stuff like that was where you got those real nuggets of performance advice. But most of the time I talked to him, it was just general how to be happy, how much he loves how to paint, how much he loves how to travel, how much he loves how to sing. And that's where I felt like I got more than just an interview or reading a book.
You got a human answer from a great artist.
And that's what he was. When you were backstage with him, he was just a man that would tell you cool stories.
One thing he does, and I don't know if you do this, Matt, but if you don't do this, I'm not going to think less of you. But one of the things that Tony Bennett did on stage that always amazed me, even when he got up there in age, it didn't matter. He never had any water on stage with him. He never drank any water. He performed for an hour or whatever it was, never had any water as other performers do. I'm not putting down other performers, but what amazed me was the fact that he could do that.
Well, truthfully, hydration comes before the show.
Well, there's no doubt about that, but there are people that still need more after performing for X amount of minutes just because they sweated out or whatever, nerves, whatever it is. He could do it. He just went out and just didn't drink water or booze.
The booze part I still do, but
yeah. You also drink lemonade on stage, which I find disgusting.
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, truthfully, be you know, when you're touring on the road, and you know, Tony had a gruesome schedule too. I mean, as jazz performers, we're performing almost every night, right? So everything starts in the beginning of the morning. You got to drink chug. And also, Tony was a very gifted technical singer. So, you know, you see a lot of also the way singing has changed over the years. Like pop music uses a lot more of the throat that gives that soulful, gritty sound, where Tony Bennett and myself all, you know, came from that classical kind of performing where you sang from your diaphragm, you didn't use your throat. Those are two big things. And, you know, the beautiful thing about Tony is that even though he aged, he didn't necessarily change the way he approached the music, but he changed the technical way that he always was living within the age of his voice, which I think is why he could sing past 90. He didn't try to be the big singer with the, you know, the bel canto at the, he would get into the lyric more. He would work more at the phrasing. And if you look at his career of like, you know, 70 years, that guy's got a lot of recordings.
He does. When you decided to put the show together and you had to select key songs, I mean, you can't do everything that Tony did, obviously, but was there one or two? Clearly, I think, and from a popular perspective, I Left My Heart in San Francisco is the key, but there are so many others. When you looked at his catalog and you look at his performances and you obviously knew him, did you get a sense of what his favorite song or songs were? And then did you are you incorporating that in your performance at the Smith Center again, Friday and Saturdays, February 21st and 22nd?
Well, I remember, I think my band and I, we were in Tokyo and we were opening for him. And obviously my musicians know his musicians just because we all play together. And their piano player had a set list and it was literally on a big, long, looked like receipt. And there was 28 tunes. And my trumpet player goes, "So which ones are you playing?" And the piano player goes, "All of them. Watch this." So, I mean, Tony Bennett was amazing at singing the verse in the head. So when I was deciding to pick the songs, obviously, it's almost impossible for me to imitate. You know, when I say that I'm doing a tribute or an homage, it's really how the songs affected me, how I can tell stories about my journey with Tony. But the song selection, at first, I really wanted to pick the songs that were my favorite Tony Bennett songs. And then what I noticed in the beginning of our tour, people were like, "I don't know that song. I don't know that song. Did you write that song?" So, obviously you can't do a show without I Left My Heart in San Francisco, but then I had to start incorporating more of his popular tunes. But in the end, the set list became really the songs that when I was at the Golden Nugget and I got to see him perform, it was the songs that would affect me the most. And then I put in around the popular songs that everybody knows.
Now that's a good strategy. You make a good point. You're not a quote unquote tribute artist. You're Matt Dusk. So you are performing selections from the Tony Bennett catalog that affected you, but it's you singing it. You're not trying to mimic Tony.
It's hard. It's really hard to, I give kudos to the people who can really put on the hat, put on the accent, do everything word for word. I just suck at that. I'm not good at it. I remember early in my career, the band leader was like, "Hey, can you wear a hat?" And I was like, "I can't do it." And he's like, "Well, I probably can't use you then." And I was like, "I don't know what you want me to say. I look terrible."
Right. Now you got to be yourself. I mean,
It wasn't taking a stand. It's just like, if I don't feel comfortable doing it, I'm doing a disservice, not only to the music, but also to the audience, because then I'm being fake and I got to be me, right?
There is a difference between, as we mentioned a moment ago, or as I mentioned, I'm doing the royal we, I don't know why. As I mentioned a while ago, last year you came in and you did Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
You didn't do Frank Sinatra, but you performed songs that Frank Sinatra performed. And now Tony Bennett. The difference between the two, as I see it, I'd like to get your feedback on it because you're the artist, is that Sinatra communicated on a very emotional level. He was able to do that in a very subtle way in some cases and unsubtle in other cases, but he was able to communicate emotion. Tony Bennett's performances were more, as you said earlier, technical and yet memorable as well. And mm-hmm. So how is it possible to get affected by songs from Tony Bennett who deliver them more from a technical point of view than an emotional point of view?
It's a good point. I mean, when I kind of compare Frank to Tony, which is a losing battle to begin.
All the way around, right.
It's not a versus. It's just like, what qualities are you attracted to? Frank Sinatra being older was kind of the first Justin Bieber, right? I mean, he was the first pop icon. And at the time he was singing very, very popular songs, if not the hits of the days. Tony Bennett being, I think he was 10 years or so younger. He was coming into a much different era when he was kind of hitting his prime. And Tony Bennett was always kind of, I think he always considered himself to be a jazz singer. Again, I never asked him that question because it's Tony Bennett. He is his own, he is his own genre.
Just, yeah, exactly right.
Tony. but from I'm just discussing this as a listener without having thought this through, but like the amazing thing about Sinatra is that he had this huge pop presence, which he was at the top of his game. Then nobody wanted to hire him. And he clawed back had some extremely gut-wrenching records. Like my favorite record is In the Wee Small Hours of the Morning, which showed a completely different side to him. And then he goes up through the 60s into That's Life, Summer Wind, you know, the whole Nelson Riddle arrangement.
Yeah.
And then went to Reprise. And Tony Bennett was always a jazz artist. I don't think anybody ever saw him as being a Justin Bieber. And I think that's what made Tony so unique, was that throughout his career, he never really changed. Yes, he changed his approach to singing just because of his physicality, but he was always the same guy, where Frank went through massive highs, massive lows, big highs. Not to say Tony didn't have his own problems. We all know in the late 70s, he was having a bunch of problems. But back in the 90s, man, that guy was, you know, he got on that show MTV Unplugged. You know, big kudos to his son, Danny Bennett, mm-hmm. who really helped his career get right back up to there. And he became, honestly, a part of the American culture right up to the day he died. So back to the whole thing between Frank and Tony, it's like they share the emotion, but they come from different types in popular history.
And I think also Tony's delivery was more, again, back to the jazz aspect of it, seemed to be less emotional than the Sinatra performances.
He would do it different. So, you know, having spoken to a bunch of his musicians, they always say it's like, Tony's going to do it different tonight. Tony's going to do it different tonight. And I think that comes from the experience of working in smaller jazz clubs, I guess, compared to, you know, having the Bobby Soxer scream so much you can't even hear what the heck you're singing. So you got to sing the same thing all the time.
Right. Yeah. The difference between the Paramount Theater or arenas and intimate clubs. And I've seen Tony Bennett perform in a very small, intimate setting. And
it's amazing.
It is. It's quite the thing. When you go out on stage, Matt, do you have him in your head while you're performing? You're not doing Tony Bennett. You're performing as Matt Dusk, but is he in your head while you're performing the songs that he's known for? Maybe that's the way to phrase it.
It's a good, you know what? I've never been asked that. It's a good question.
Well, that's why I'm here, Matt.
Yeah. what have I done? Like 150 interviews this year on? Still, no one's asked that. So you win. Obviously in between. So the way I structure my show is I'll do a few tunes and I'll tell a story either he told me or tell a story, bring the audience on a journey of his life. I have to say it's almost impossible not to think about him when I'm singing I Left My Heart in San Francisco, because, and I tell the story on stage, it's a doozy of a song. Like Tony was very blessed that not only did he take a chance on it, and eventually became a hit for him. I don't know if you know the whole story. So I think it was written in 1953. Nobody wanted to record it. He was coming through San Francisco, wanted to play a song about the town. Anyways, 9 years of this song just sitting in storage, no one would record it. He's like, let's give it a shot. So there's a lot of weight on the story of the song. I mean, if it wasn't for Tony Bennett, who's to know if we would be talking about that song today? And I think that's really where artists and repertoire are just inseparable on that thing. So when I was singing the song, trying to record it, literally tried to record my vocal to that like 40 times over the course of 6 months. I do it a few times. I listen back. Okay, I'll take a week off, listen back. And I realized that not only is it a difficult song, but I wasn't alone. Frank Sinatra even took a crack at recording it. And when he heard his version compared to Tony's, disliked it so much that he recalled back all the masters. He said, you're not allowed to sell them. And the song honestly wasn't released till decades later. So I was like, okay, if Frank's having a tough time, I don't feel so bad. but how do you release a record how do you release a record without that song on it? And I remember one night when I was backstage with him, this is back in Tokyo, we were talking about stuff, and he just said to me, listen, kid, you just got to be yourself. You just got to go out there, just be yourself and have fun. And I was like, okay, record's got to come out. I remember the story. I go down to my bar. I have a whiskey. It's 11 o'clock at night. I'm like, I'll take one more crack at this. That's the take on the record. And I listened back and I said, you know, love it or hate it, whatever. At least I know that's me. So every time I sing that song, I'm not trying to be like Tony. I always think about him going, you just got to be yourself, kid.
You're internalizing his advice.
I'm internalizing what the emotional weight of that moment is on the song. So he's with me during that song going, okay, go, go. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to ask you, I was kidding you earlier about the beard and the hair, but it raises an interesting point. And do you find that as you mature physically, you always were talented, but as you mature physically, do you find there are additional audiences that are attracted to you because they don't see you as this young punk kid trying to sing the Great American Songbook?
Yeah. There was definitely a lot of backlash when you're in your 20s. And everyone's like, oh, this guy sounds like Frank Sinatra. And everyone's like, go F yourself. He sucks. You know, especially with comparison, you know, anybody young coming up in the industry is compared to somebody. I do find that one of the benefits of having a career is those comparisons soon wane. And I think having the opportunity to have accolades or have awards, I don't think people really care about, but what they do care about is the story. It's not some person who just like, hey, I got an American Idol or Americans Got Talent. And those careers don't really last because there's usually not a story behind them. I find that, when we were kids growing up, going to school, we'd have our teachers who were in their 40s and 50s. And we're like, wow, they're the man. They get the calls for every gig. Now they're all retired and we're getting the calls and all the young kids going, wow, they're the men. So I think you're right. I think that the time does allow for a little bit of like, okay, I guess they're still around. They must be okay.
Right. But I could see that coming from the general population plus the artistic community. So that could apply both ways. Meaning, as you just described, where there are artists who are looking at you now as someone to aspire to.
Old man.
Well, those were your words. I would not say that.
Yeah.
But then you do have some great. Okay. But then there's the general public who saw you initially when you first started out, maybe were skeptical or just didn't cotton to you. I'll use that term. But over time, you've proved who you are. And now that you're more mature, they are more comfortable relating to you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think too, you know, I think we have to call the elephant in the corner of the room. A lot of, because we live in a world where there's so much media, there's so much going on from YouTube, TikTok, you know, Netflix, Prime Video, whatever, movie theater, people's memory becomes very short. And, you know, despite having, you know, done this professionally for almost 30 years, the weight of a known brand such as, you know, Sinatra or Ella Fitzgerald or
Tony Bennett
really helps people understand what they're seeing. So, for example, I could come back into town and I could say, hey, Matt Dusk is playing here. They're like, I left my heart in San Francisco. Tony Bennett, Matt Dusk. Okay, I'm there. And that's okay. That's okay because I'm happy to perform the music. And again, like I said, I'm not only bringing attention to their careers, but I'm also allowing people to, once they get in the room, they quickly drop the expectation and they come into the music because that's what we do as artists, right? We get people to go, oh, look at that time. The show's over. You know, like that's the beauty of music. It's really just a time warp into this moment.
There is. And I want to get back to your performance, which again is at the Smith Center Friday and Saturday, February 21st and 22nd. And it's good that you're coming back within the year, and it's now Tony Bennett. Were you surprised? I'm sure you did some research when you were putting this all together, even though you knew the man, the artist, but you probably also did some additional research. At least I'm assuming that's the case. And was there anything surprising that you found out or interesting that you found out about Tony that you didn't know before and that you incorporate in your performance?
Where are these questions coming from? These are so original. You know, the one thing, like, I never really had an opportunity to talk with Tony about was I never asked him about I Left My Heart in San Francisco. Like, I mean, again, I wasn't really so much into asking specific questions with him, more about him sharing life advice. And the funny thing is, you get people to talk about themselves, they'll definitely drop their feeling about everything. The song I Left My Heart in San Francisco, you know, it was really written quickly. And the two writers were kind of like, yeah, we were just looking for a payday. And once Tony started to see how people would react to the song, I learned this by listening to interviews with him online. He's like, I feel very blessed to have had that song into my life. And every time I sing it, I love it. And here's the deal. Most artists you talk to that have to sing their hits all the time, you know, make no bones about saying they hate it. You know, like even Frank said, you know, that singing My Way became such a burden because it became such a, what's the word, me song. And he didn't like how it was all about me. Where Tony was blessed with a song that he, at least that's what he said in his interviews, was that, and it showed on stage, that if it wasn't for that, he feels like he wouldn't have that connection with everybody. So, man, I learned that.
Do you share that on stage with the audience?
Especially during I Left My Heart in San Francisco, because I know the emotion that weight carries with the crowd. It's really, once you tell the story, you start singing the song, the applause, there's a lot of weight that the audience recognizes. And, you know, I feel very blessed that they don't boo me off stage when I sing that song.
No, but I think that's why I wanted you to answer the question that way, was by incorporating it in your performance, you're giving the audience a sense of Tony's view of the song and of that song's impact on his career. I think that adds to, as you call it, the weight of your performance as well.
I think so. I think that there's a lot of songs, if you asked anybody on the corner, do you know Tony Bennett? You know, a bunch of people would say yes, probably majority say no, but then say, okay, what's your favorite Tony Bennett song? The one with the heart. You know what I mean? Yeah. We should all be blessed with a song that lasts, well, like over 70 years.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been award-winning, multi-award-winning, platinum-selling artist Matt Dusk. He's performing Matt Dusk Sings Tony Bennett, The Best Is Yet to Come. It's at Myron's at the Smith Center this Friday and Saturday, February 21st and 22nd. For ticket information, go to thesmithcenter.com. For everything about Matt, go to mattdusk.com. And you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube, and occasionally even on my show, because he appears when
he's down. That's the best of the social. Exactly. Right there with Ira.
Thanks again for coming on.
You're always a pleasure.
See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world.